Welcome to Chaotic Harmony. My name is John.
This is Crystal. We talk about the joys and the challenges of teaching music in the elementary school classroom.
We share struggles, we brainstorm solutions.
And we would love to have you join us.
Welcome to another episode of Chaotic Harmony. And this is a bonus one, I guess 96.5. So you'll get a regular numbered episode with Rachel Pack next week. But today we have a special amazing guest. If you are in San Diego County's VAPA, you've been affected positively by this person in some shape or form. She's the warm, the lovely, the power behind the wheel, Pauline Crooks. Hello, Pauline.
Hey, how's it going?
It is going fine. How are you doing this Friday of this week?
I'm doing pretty good. Glad that heat wave has broken. And
how was that heat wave for you?
It was not pleasant. I know I'm very fortunate because we have air conditioning at our house. And so I feel bad for the people that did not, but it was just unexpectedly warm. So
yeah, I know our listeners in Arizona are going to roll their eyes, but it was on the hotter end for sure. Yes. And unfortunately, my neighborhood, it was hit. We had 5 power outages in 48 hours. It was ridiculous. My parents, I'm currently living with my parents, and they're like, they're senior citizens. And with no AC, it's like, oh my goodness, how are we going to get through this? So I'm glad everything's cooling down now, that's for sure.
Yes.
And the school year, going what, great? Or?
Yeah, there's a lot of really good things happening. Some, stressful things, as with any new school year, but overall things are going well.
Awesome, glad to hear that. So to those who don't know Pauline, can you describe to the world abroad, what is your title and what do you do on a daily basis?
I'm a visual and performing arts coordinator at the San Diego County Office of Education. So we support 42 districts, plus the students in our own district in our core and community schools. And every day looks a little bit different in my world because my job is to provide whatever is needed, resources, connections to other people, professional learning support, a listening ear, whatever it happens to be. So every day is new and exciting.
Okay. And also, since you're part of the county, how does that differentiate from, say, like Russ Sperling's job as director for San Unified or our former VAPA coordinator position with Mark Kiemer?
It's a similar position, but I get to work with all of our districts, whereas someone in one of those roles is generally specific to their own school district. And of course, each of those roles across our 58 counties look different. I just got back from Sacramento with my peers from different county offices, and our jobs are all very different. And our VAPA directors, coordinators, TOSAs, et cetera, across our own county, their roles and responsibilities are all very diverse as well.
So it's providing support and listening ears and like everything in a more broader spectrum, I guess.
Yes. And being aware of what's going on policy-wise, what's going on with different laws, what's going on with pedagogy. There's a lot.
Yeah. So what is currently going on? What do you see is like the number one hot button topic going on in San Diego County or California at the moment?
There's a lot of things. Obviously, obvious to you and I, the implementation of Proposition 28 yes. funding, and the first reports are due by the end of this month for any money that was utilized last year. So that deadline is coming up really soon, and people making plans for how they're going to spend this year's allocation of funding. So that's, a big topic of conversation. Also, in Universal Design for Learning, they have a brand new set of guidelines that just came out at the very end of July. And so that's another big topic. And supporting our multilingual learners, another large topic as always. And then support for ethnic studies, since that's going to be a required high school class, college graduation course coming up in the very near future. So there's a lot.
Yeah, that sounds like a lot. Like, I don't know, it's me being just in my own classroom. The fact that you have to deal with not just, TK to 6, but also middle school, also high school. Clearly, you're just someone who twiddles your thumbs and looks at a wall. That's all you do, right?
No,
you have a lot. My goodness. I the more I talk with you, like more I was like, oh, this is a lot. It's a lot. I'm glad you're breathing, though, and I'm glad for that. So let's actually pull back a little bit. Let's talk about what we could call our program notes. So what's your journey, your history with the arts? What's the genesis of your journey, I guess?
Well, my mom's family is always very into music. And so I was around music all the time. My mom was an accompanist for all kinds of choirs at the high school, at our church. So I was at a rehearsal almost all the time, or eventually when we had our own piano at our house, listening to my mom play all the time. So when I was in fourth grade, I naturally wanted to play an instrument. And so I started doing that. Flute is what I started on.
Hey,
flute. Yeah. Which I just realized was what you did as well recently.
Oh, yeah.
So, I was like, oh, another thing we have in common. Before that, I knew I wanted to be a teacher when I was in second grade. And then it just came by the end of middle school, I knew that I needed to be a music teacher. So I did that.
You knew in second grade. What was it that called you? Because I know everyone has their own journey. For me, I was not called initially. Later on, what was it that appealed to you to be a music teacher?
Well, at first it was at the end of first grade, I believe it was, we got to keep our spelling books because the school was getting brand new books. And so I made my brothers play spelling test over the summer all the time, which they're both younger than me. So that was quite amusing. And it just took off from there. Like, I loved supporting them and guiding them and obviously getting on their nerves because that's what big sisters are supposed to do. But I just loved always helping people and I love learning. So those things just naturally went together. And as I got older and went through, you know, upper elementary and middle school, I had some non-examples, what I'll call them, of amazing pedagogy as well as ways to treat human beings. And I know all the educators that I was in their classrooms, they were just doing the very best that they could. But the way in which I saw myself and classmates treated, I just knew that there was a better way to do that. I just innately knew that and just decided, you know what, I'm going to become a teacher because kids need somebody that knows their content knowledge and how to teach, as well as somebody that's caring and compassionate. And so that's been what has driven me all this time.
I appreciate that. Yeah. So when did you start teaching? Was like right after college? And like, did you start doing like, which level were you focused in?
Actually, when I first started teaching, I taught in a district where I was the K-12 teacher. So I was in a Catholic school setting because I graduated from a Catholic school and just ended up getting a job in that same district, although it was in a very rural area. So I taught at three K-8 schools and the high school. So I was my own feeder. The marching band had like 7 people in it when the school started. And by the end of the marching band season, the program had gotten much bigger. And yeah.
Oh my
goodness. That's what I started out with. Yeah.
Sorry.
No, that's okay.
I'm sure that like at least continuity was not the problem for your situation.
Right. Yeah. So, yep. And then I've taught K-12. I most recently, before coming to the county office, spent 14 years teaching middle school. That's really my favorite age of student, which I find people are either like, yes, I feel the same way, or like, oh my goodness.
Yeah.
I just love middle school age students.
What is it about middle school that really appealed to you?
The fact that they're all trying to find themselves. Well, many of them are trying to find themselves. Some of them already knew who they are and are very strong in that. They could be very goofy one minute and you could talk about really like little kid type things, and then the next minute be very mature and everywhere in between. And even though one minute they may hate one another or dislike you as a teacher, and the next moment they're like, goodbye, giving you a hug and as they're leaving out the door. So I don't know, for some reason it was just that just appealed to me there, the childlikeness and the maturity that went hand in hand.
Gotcha. Yeah, for me, I guess I'm drawn to the uppers of the elementary school. So I get you there. But lately, I feel like just ever since COVID, I feel like the younger ones are just, I just enjoy being a goober with them, whatnot. But I understand. Yeah. And so you were in San Diego before you jumped up to admin, or were you at a different site?
I was in a different district in San Diego County.
Okay.
Yeah. So I first started teaching in Ohio and then moved here 6 or 7 years into my career. And then got an administrative degree and just so happened that this job became open right around the time I was finishing that degree. And so I applied for it and here I am.
What brought you to admin then?
Well, I love learning. That's part of it. And so I already had a master's degree, but I just decided to get another one in a cohort of teachers in my district for being administrator. And I'd had a lot of people tell me I was a union rep and frequently in leadership department chair type roles and things like that in our school site. And a lot of my friends would say, you know, I think you'd make a really good principal. Mm-hmm. And I thought they were kind of crazy. But then the more I thought about it, I was like, well, I might as well get that degree. And then if an opportunity comes up or I just decide, yeah, I think I want to try this out, then I could do that.
What was like doing an admin credential while teaching?
It was a lot of work.
Sure.
And I had my youngest child, was maybe a month old when I started that program, that degree program, but it was online.
Okay.
It was synchronous and asynchronous. So I was holding a baby while I was going to class at night. So I just made it work. I'm just one of those people that will just figure out how to make things work.
That's fair. I always look at my friends who get or pursue admin credentials or their masters and like, that's not like, that's a lot. I remember when I first started, my former roommate and I were thinking of, we were considering pursuing our doctorate and we said, we should get our teaching credentials so we can do our doctorate mm-hmm. while teaching. And like looking back, it's like, man, that's so much work. That's a lot. So I tip my hat to you, Pauline. Man. So you wanted to see something like more like you were encouraged because people shared that you would be a good admin. Since becoming admin, like what have you noticed like some of the biggest bottlenecks that ensure that in the system that ensures VAPA's health essentially?
A lot of it really has to do with the mindset of the individuals. So if you have a superintendent, an assistant superintendent, a director of curriculum instruction, a principal, like whatever that person in a key role happens to be that gets the value of arts education, whether it's through they're convinced by research, they're convinced because they were in an arts class as a student. You know, we have a lot of adults in California because the ed code wasn't followed or there were cuts when they were children, they didn't have the same opportunities. And I came from the Midwest and I had many of the arts disciplines all throughout my K-12 experience, whereas a lot of people I encounter in California didn't have that opportunity. And so they don't necessarily get it on that personal level. So if they've seen a life transformed of a student, of their own child or niece or nephew or something like that, they have that personal connection, then they get it. And that really makes the biggest difference.
Yeah, I can only imagine because I know, like, for example, we've shared on this podcast several times before Crystal and myself were hired. There was like a desert, essentially, of VAPA down here for 35 mm-hmm. years. And so whenever we talk to our friends in the East Coast, like, they get it. We are trying to get it. But, how do you try to get those who don't see it on the same page, for lack of a better term?
Well, you have to figure out what the lever is that will help move them from where they are to a greater understanding. So if it happens to be, you know, a lot of times we ask people to think about a child that they know, whether it's one of their students at their site or a next door neighbor or a niece or nephew, like I mentioned before, someone like that whose life has been positively impacted by the arts or whose life could be impacted by the arts if they're, you know, struggling with something. Sometimes it's that personal connection. Sometimes it's looking at research. So I always have a lot of research available. So if I'm talking to a principal in chronic absenteeism, which is a big issue for most school sites right now, if they're looking at that, then did you realize that this is how arts education can support you in meeting that goal with your students? If it's connecting with families, like here's some research. So in some cases it is that, you know, the personal story, sometimes it's the research, sometimes it's a school leader talking to another school leader who believes in arts education and sees the results for students and them saying, hey, did you know that this is what happened at my site? Sometimes it's that shining a spotlight in either a classroom where that's happening or school site or a district. And then the other leaders start noticing that and what's happening. And then, wait, that seems to be going well. I wonder what that would look like here. And then they start asking questions. So it really, so much of this is about building relationships and knowing where people are and meeting them wherever they are, not with as easy as it can be to just say, you need to do this. Like, most of us, that's not how we work as human beings, right? We want someone to acknowledge where we are, to hear our story, to hear what we're going through, and then help them figure out how to implement like arts education, like we're talking about in this case.
Yeah, I see that. And I know back when Mark was our VAPA coordinator, he really similar idea. He really wanted to focus on building these relationships. And it's important. I feel like whenever we're just focused on our kids, focus on, you know, criteria, focus on objectives, we forget, hey, we also have to be friends to the people that are around us as well. I guess my follow-up question to that, though, is so as I mentioned a little bit, currently our district does not have a VAPA coordinator. And the stuff that you've mentioned about building relationships focuses a lot on you as the admin talking to fellow admin. What advice do you have for people like us who are teachers kind of like scattered across the four winds of Chula Vista trying, how do you encourage them to build or relationships or create common language with either our fellow coworkers or parents or admin?
That is a really big thing, right? Because it is great to have someone like you did and hopefully will again soon in that role. And that person can't be expected to do everything for every, right? Sometimes we think that having a person in a role is going to like magically fix everything. And I know that's not what you're referring to, but sure, it's like a thing that I run up across a lot of times in so many districts. So there are all kinds of like handouts and things. There are all kinds of websites with language that you can use. You can look in our framework for talking points. So just having like a few of those, and again, like sharing out with the people at your site, how things are going, connecting with teachers about individual students, especially if you know a student is really struggling in another class and then they're doing really well in your class, just like we want to reach out to the family members and say, hey, call with the good news, right? Instead of getting, you know, as a parent looking at your phone like, oh no, it's the school. Is my kid hurt or in trouble? What's happening, right? Like, did you know that your child did this amazing thing today? So again, it's all about making those connections. And it is so hard, especially in arts education, where we tend to have so many students, right? You're not in a class with just 20 students or 30 or 40 students all year long, those same kids. You have hundreds of students in most cases, which is what we want, right? And figuring out how to make those personal connections is much more challenging. But trying to set aside time, even if it's 15 minutes a week, even if it means walking through the office or leaving a sticky note on someone's desk or on their office door, or, you know, interacting somehow, setting aside some time to do that is so very important and can actually make, it's amazing the little tiny things that can make such a big difference that sometimes we know immediately that it happened and other times we don't.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like being transparent to your fellow coworkers on the positive elements. And also, like, I know Chula Vista recently has adopted this notion of creating newsletters to send to our parents. So yeah, I think, yeah, giving transparency of what's happening in our four walls. That's good. I like that. And I also like, reminds me of when I worked under you for a bit directly with the whole, my brain's not working. Could you help me out for a second?
With the video project that we did right during the pandemic.
Wasn't just that.
Or you're talking about CMEA.
No,
it wasn't. Or something else.
It was via Twitter. It was the online.
Oh, the Twitter chat.
Wasn't the Twitter chat. Rest in peace, Twitter.
I know. The Arts with Empower Advocacy Committee.
That's it. Thank you. Yes.
Yep. Thanks.
We got there somehow. So like, but something that it seems like been a very common theme is like giving transparency even to people across the world. And
yes.
Okay. Well, I guess that kind of segues into like what I really wanted to focus today on. You have been, correct me if I'm wrong, you were one of the founders of the San Diego Mega Arts Conference. Is that correct?
Yes, I was invited to be involved in that from near the very beginning.
So for me, it's been a huge thing, especially during my early days as an educator, which is like an amazing event that brings arts educators from around the county and even the state. Just talk about that, but could you like break it down? What is the Mega Arts Conference and what is its ethos exactly?
Well, the conference was designed to bring together arts educators from all of our arts disciplines, K-12, TK-12. We even have a lot of college professors involved in the conference generally. And so we have people just from all levels, all arts disciplines, bringing in multiple subject teachers from any, like everyone is welcome. Our teaching artists are welcome to be a part of it and are frequently presenters. So it's the idea was to bring everyone together into one conference, because we used to have separate local conferences for music, for example, for dance, for theater, for visual art. And then the idea came about with Russ Sperling, like, what if we brought everybody together? So I was the president of the Southern Border section of CMEA at the time. And so that's why I was at the table. So I've essentially been involved the whole time the conference has been going on since before I had the job I have now. So that's really the idea, and building community and people learning from one another. Like, we can set up all these sessions, and we have such an amazing list of sessions this year. I'm so very excited. I'm just more excited every year about the sessions. And it's also really powerful, people connecting at breakfast, people connecting at lunch, people connecting, you know, walking between sessions and things to learn from one another. And it doesn't have to be a visual art teacher learning from another visual art teacher. It can be, but it can also be a visual art teacher connecting with a dance teacher. And that watching that happen is one of the best things, right? Just, and that's where, like, not being in a classroom every day with students, it's these kinds of moments where I get to bring together adults and watch them learn from one another that really is really special.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree. I remember early on going to I tried to focus on music, and then like the music ones I wanted didn't fit for this schedule. It's like, let's just try visual art. I forget which one it was. It was in 2018, but it was really phenomenal because it broke the ideas of, like, it was meant for art, but all these concepts could be utilized for any art, really. So, and also I remember, like, my first year we were in Bala Park, and like I remember that the lawns were just filled with arts educators. It was a phenomenal sight, and I decided to just, it was my first year also as a teacher. And so I remember breaking bread with Zoe Kumagai, Mark Keemer, a bunch of people I didn't know who I later became friends with, which was, it was a great moment. Yeah. So, and also you guys, you all did a great job pushing all the way. Let me backpedal. When did you start? When did this all thing start?
2013 was the first conference. Oh. And it was so funny because we did the walkthrough the day before of the park, and it was pouring rain, and we all had umbrellas, like, oh no, what's gonna happen? But the weather was fine the next day, and some years it's really hot. But yeah, so that was the first one. We didn't always have one during the pandemic. We had a virtual one, we did a hybrid conference, and then last year and this year we're at Marina Village again, where we were last year. So it's really nice. You can see all the boats in the water, and everyone has lunch together and breakfast in the same room, and we're a little bit closer together proximity-wise. So I think we're going to probably outgrow that facility possibly after this year, but it's still it's going to be a great day.
Yeah, good. I'm looking forward to it. Yeah. When is it going to be?
It is Tuesday, October 8th.
And how can people sign up if they wish to participate?
We have a registration link, so it's available on the SDCOE VAPO webpage and also our Arts Empower website, and I can send you the link as well.
Yeah, we'll place it in the comments or the wow, I butchered that. We'll place it in the things below. But also, what is there a certain date that people need to register by?
As soon as possible, because we have to get the food numbers and things like that in. So if we have spaces, we'll usually take people coming up at the door. But my assistant doesn't hear me say that. But usually there's a couple of extra spaces, but awesome. Yeah.
Okay. I am sure you as the, well, actually, what is one of your favorite sessions that you've been to during the Mega Arts Conference? That comes to mind.
Like you, I really, so as a music educator, that's where my most comfortable place is. Right, to be. So I really love going to other sessions when I can. Now I don't always get to go in, or I check in on things and then pop back out. But when I push myself out of my comfort zone and go to something, especially when it's really active and we're dancing around the room or whatever it happens to be, or doing some theater exercises and things like that, when I get to experience those experiential pieces, that are really great. So it's really hard for me to pick just one because I've seen so many amazing sessions, but yeah.
Fair enough, yeah. To those who are teaching at so many school sites, I'm sure it's difficult to try to coordinate coming to this. What would be your words of advice to someone who's either a new teacher and doesn't really fully understand the benefits of an event like this, or someone who is just has a lot on their plate? Why should they come? Like, yeah.
Yeah, that is really important. And I know sometimes I think most of us as educators, it's more work to be sick, right? I hear that all the time from people. And it's really important to set aside time as an individual to take care of yourself and to learn, put yourself in the space of a learner. No matter how long you've been teaching, you can share your expertise with others, and there's still room to learn new things. So if you can actually make it happen, I highly recommend it because, like I said, you will learn things, you will meet new people if you leave yourself open to that, and you will be able to share your expertise with other people as well. And to keep that from others just isn't the most kind thing because everybody has something to share. You just started teaching this month, you've got things to share.
Yeah, be kind, okay, people?
We all
But
need each other.
we do all need each other, whether it's Mega Arts or really whether it's another conference. Like,
Yes.
because if you're listening and you're in Arizona, I mean, like, that's it's a drive, but
We have some people coming from Nevada.
then what's your excuse, Arizona? What's your excuse? What part of Nevada are they coming from?
From Vegas.
Okay, very cool. Okay,
Some people coming
well,
down from Northern California and from the Bay Area and from all over the place. So
nice.
everybody's
Okay, I'm
welcome.
looking for now. Okay, I'm looking forward to this. Awesome. Cool. So I guess what I'd like to jump over to, so I've asked some friends, listeners of the show, some questions, and you're welcome to either answer them or to say, I will plead the fifth, or whichever, however you wish, way you'd like to approach it. And also, I'll paste this in the chat so it's easier. Some
Oh,
of
great.
these are a little bit on the longer end. Thank you to the listeners who have given these questions out, because we rarely have an admin to talk that's not either Mark or Lauren. So the first question: How can we teach? Oh no! How can we train teaching artists to fill gaps in public education, focusing on student-centered teaching rather than performance-based instruction, given arts teachers have a finite amount of time and the need for more arts education?
Well, that's a really great question. We are so fortunate here in San Diego County. So like I said, I talk to people all over the state very regularly, and we have an immense amount of very qualified teaching artists. We do have teaching artists who practice their craft most of the time, they're acting most of the time, and then spend a little bit of time with our students or symphony musicians that come out to schools occasionally. But we also have a lot of those teaching artists who are still practicing their craft, but they are very well versed in the standards for arts education in our state that have learned a lot of classroom management techniques that are really student-centered, and not only just there to share some aspects of being a professional in the workforce. So I actually have a web page with a lot of the arts organizations listed there and their contact information that I'm happy to share as well to get some ideas. It's not a finite list, it's growing all the time. But if you're looking for a place to start, there's some just wonderful artists that have spent a lot of time working with students in our county.
So it seems like there are teaching artists that really do care about the student centered, and then making
Oh,
sure
yes.
we really lean into that element
Yes,
as we talk about.
absolutely. And there are other people like me at universities and things that are putting together more detailed training programs for teaching artists as well. I believe there's some of that work happening right now at Cal State San Marcos. Here locally, we have regular professional learning that the county offers for our teaching artists around standards and the framework and things like that. And then the arts organizations themselves get together and provide professional learning and bring in experts to make sure that their artists are really up on what's going on in the classroom.
I believe this question was sent from outside of the county, and so I guess my question—it's really hard because training is like a very thorough and like thick base. If you could just give one bullet point to this person who sent the question, like what would be one key thing to ensure that these teaching artists, who may or may not have had this background, that pedagogy that we've had, like what's a one thing you want to make sure that they're trained by to focus on student-centered teaching?
Well, I'd probably give them a question or two and ask them about a scenario with something with a student. So if you have a particular concern come up or something you've seen before, like obviously people have a reason for asking this question. So how would you handle a particular situation? And then see what their response is, because that's going to tell you a lot.
Okay. Cool. Our second question comes from anonymous number two. sending here. To be a VAPA coordinator, do you need to have a background in all the arts? And what has helped you as someone who you have a music background? What's helped you balance out your biases?
It's helpful to have a background in all the arts, and that person is probably kind of hard to find. My background is mostly in music. That's what I have a degree in, music education. I also was in a lot of musicals when I was in high school. So I have I've been on a stage delivering lines before. I've helped build scenery, like those kinds of things. And I had my students do all kinds of acting regularly as a music teacher. I have a little bit of dance in there too. So dance and visual art were probably where I felt the most not prepared, but nobody expects me to be an expert in every single content area. But I have continued to go, like I'll go to workshops at conferences. I try to go to conferences from the other arts disciplines. I, you know, seek out any kind of training I can. I go to museums, I go to shows, I talk to my peers. And always taking that learner stance. So I have to remember that I don't have to know everything, because that's humanly impossible. And I'm open to the idea that I don't know everything. So I also have a list of experts. If somebody asks me a question, that if I can't answer it, I refer to them to somebody else, or I connect with somebody else to ask. Because we have to get past that. Just like as teachers, we're not supposed to be the holder of all the knowledge that we're pouring into our students, right? So it's the same thing. So I feel like I'm modeling that when I say, I don't know everything, and that's okay. So it's okay for anyone in that role not to know everything. As far as having any biases, I was made very keenly aware before even starting this role, actually in planning the conference with my peers, that there are different arts disciplines where people just feel differently, right? And they want to make sure they're not left out. And, you know, following two music people in my role, that was definitely a thing that was brought to my attention. Like, how are you going to make sure you're not just another one of those, you know, band directors or music teachers that, like, oh, not that they necessarily thought that about my colleagues who were in the role before me. I don't want to imply that. But so I make sure when we're putting pictures out there to try to balance all the arts disciplines, when I'm putting anything, if there's like icons about something, is everybody here? What does this look like? Just so that I try to make sure all students are represented in different things. So, and I may be like overthinking that too much, but that inclusion piece, I know if people don't feel seen and heard, what that does to them. And so I go out of my way as much as humanly possible. And when somebody brings it to my attention that it might even appear that there's a bias towards something, I'm open to listening. And that can be, not that I always like that or I'm always comfortable with it, you know, like it still is hard for me to hear sometimes too, but I need that feedback. So I seek out that feedback. And when people share something like that with me, I listen and I take it very seriously and ask for their input on how I can do better. Mm.
Very cool. I appreciate that. I had a follow up, but then I was so consumed by your wealth of thoughts that it got consumed. So, anywho, if it pops up, it pops up. Our third question comes from Anonymous3. What advice would you give to someone who is hesitant about bringing in teaching artists because they feel deeply connected to their program, having poured their heart and soul into it? I think this is also Anonymous1, same person. So,
that makes sense. I know there's a lot of conflicting feelings about that at times from different people. And I had this conversation with some of my colleagues the other day about being like a purist, if you will, about like standards and those types of things, which I believe very wholeheartedly in. And to bring in somebody that has that recent professional experience in the world, because I know when I first started teaching music, sometimes I would play in ensembles and things like that, or sing in a choir, or do different things like that. But at different points in my career and my life, that wasn't something possible. And I know when I let other people into my classroom to work with my students, when I was teaching middle school band, I would have different professional musicians come in and work with my students. I know I was very fortunate to do that. Sometimes they wouldn't do things the way I wanted them to, or they'd offer conflicting information or things like that. But I also felt that I was taking away something from my students if I didn't give them that opportunity to hear from somebody else. And so I looked at it as, you know, they might be saying, and a lot of times they would say the exact same things, right? I have a guest conductor come in or something to work with my students, and I'd be sitting there and they would respond so beautifully to what this person was saying. I'm like, I've been saying that same thing with slightly different words for months. Why are you listening to this person, right? Like, that can become frustrating. And, you know, they connected in a different way than I could give them. So, again, it's just part of that letting go. Obviously, it depends upon the person. You have to trust your instincts too. But I think teaching artists are just a wonderful resource for us. And it's important to be open to that.
Appreciate that. Our next question comes from Anonymous. I guess three, since it seems like three and one were the same person. So Anonymous 3.5. How is Proposition 28? How is Proposition 28 being implemented in our highest need communities, the schools and districts without art and without VAPA coordination? How are we ensuring that supporting them in supporting the arts? And if you need some time to think about this, I can just like, yeah, we can feel free.
If you want to give me just a second, because also sure. The puppies are being really loud.
Puppies.
And they don't want to go outside. They're like freaked out because they got multiple shots today.
Yeah. I know if I got multiple shots, I'd be freaked out as well.
Okay. So Proposition 28 is being implemented in a variety of ways across our state. So every district is unique.
Can I put you on pause just in case our listeners don't know? Proposition 28. Can you break that down for us? It's been huge for our district and every district in California. Can you, to our listeners though, that have not been affected?
Absolutely. So Proposition 28 was a proposition passed by voters in the state of California, around 64% of them. So that's an overwhelming amount of votes for something in November 2022. And this funding is given to every single school in our entire state on an annual basis forever, until there's another act of the legislature or a fiscal emergency and the governor has to suspend Prop 98, which is the formula for how our schools are funded. So this is not an insubstantial amount of money. It's, you know, a good amount of money that's given annually to our schools. So it just started, the first allocation of funding came last school year. It officially went into the school's account, the district's accounts in February. And now the next year's funding is being rolled out. So every year there'll be a new year of funding and each district has 3 years to spend each year's funding. So now that we're in year two, the CDE, I was just with the people in charge of this the other day, they're working on how to make sure that as they're adding new templates and things to their website, that it doesn't like, there's no glitches when they open up the portal for year two for reporting and things like that. So it's a little bit of a puzzle. And it's one of those things that because it's so new, there have been and will continue to be some growing pains around it is how I am trying to look at it. So it's just being implemented in so many different ways because the idea is that the money goes directly to the district, but there's a formula of exactly the dollar amount every school site should get. And that's listed publicly on the California Department of Education's website. So you can see that exact dollar amount that every school is getting. And it's supposed to be decided at the school site by the principal in coordination with teachers, students, families, the community on how the money is going to be spent. And in some situations, that is being modeled in a beautiful way. Some of our school districts have written or are in the process of revising a strategic arts education plan for their district, so that it really helps tie the district together. Here's as a district, as a community with our school board and everyone at the district office, these are our priorities for arts education. And go ahead.
Can I interject? I feel like we focus so much on negative news. Can we shout out a district that's doing it properly? Is it possible?
Ramona is one of the first ones that comes to mind.
Shout out to you, Ramona.
Unified. Yeah, okay. They are amazing. And you'll get to hear from several of our districts in Southern California at the conference at our closing session. We're going to share some inspirational stories so people know like there are amazing ways for this to happen. La Mesa Spring Valley is another one. Okay.
Good to know.
Absolutely stunning what they are doing. Super exciting stuff going on. And there's others, so don't feel left out if I didn't say your district's name, but those are the
there's
first
many
two
districts.
Yeah. Yes. So having that plan, and then you can give that plan or at least highlights from it to a school site to help make their decisions at their site. So the idea is that whatever your site needs, what your students need, and I've recommended to everybody all along. So if your school is having a chronic absenteeism issue, find the students who are not regularly coming to school and talk to them. See if they're involved in an arts education class. Because if you're at an elementary school and you have something going at your school, they're probably going to that class, right? If you're at a secondary site and it's an elective, they might not be enrolled in an arts education class. So find out what would appeal to them. Because we know if students have something they're looking forward to at school, then they're more likely to come to school when it's within their control. We all know there are kids that are not at school and it has nothing to do with anything they can control. So I'm not saying that, but talk to the students that are having discipline issues, talk to them, find out what would help them feel better engaged in school. And then you would implement those types of courses. And that would be an amazing use of this funding. So the idea is that the funding needs to be spent on new things. So you cannot decide, oh, well, we've had this dance class going for a long time. Now we're going to pay the dance teacher with Prop 28 money instead of using our general fund. That's not allowed by the law. So there are some, we're very creative with funding and education in general, right? We've had so many times ups and downs and cycles and things like that where we don't have what we thought we were going to have. And now we're trying to figure out how to make that happen. So there's been a lot of creative thoughts on how people might use Prop 28 money. And so I almost every day, I'm continually surprised by a, hey, could we use the money for that? So I go back to the basic question of, is that going to increase access to arts education for students?
Do you remember the most fun question someone asked? Can this be used
for- I really
for...
don't want to say it in case any of those people are interested. Like, can we, okay, here, I'll try to, can we use the funding to repair a piece of heavy machinery? And so I say, are students using that piece of heavy machinery in a class to meet an art standard? Oh, well, legally, they're not allowed to touch that heavy machinery. That's against the law. I'm like,
well,
hence your answer. So that's one of the more new questions, but okay. I hear them every day pretty much. And I have to pause and take a deep breath, and people are asking questions, and that's a good thing. Yeah. I always say there's, you know, people are like, oh, I've got a dumb question. I'm like, no, there's no such thing.
But are there,
I'm still going to go with no, there are no dumb questions, fair. But I've heard a lot of very creative questions. Okay. So yeah. So again, it's going very well in many, many places. And there are districts where more students have access to arts education than they did this time last year or the year before, which is amazing. And that's what the law was intended to do. It wasn't intended, you're not supposed to supplant. And that means to take, like I mentioned with the dance teacher, oh, we've been paying the dance teacher with this pot of money with our LCAP funding, and now we're gonna pay them with Prop 28 instead. That's, again, not what the law intends for us to do. So we have some districts that haven't spent any of their money yet. They still have this year and next year to spend last year's money. Not necessarily a negative decision. I know at my own elementary child's school site, they didn't spend any of the funding last year. And while there was part of me that understood, I'm also like, I would like my child to actually have arts education because they haven't had anything unless they happen to be in a teacher's classroom that valued the arts and made time for the arts and felt comfortable teaching the arts in addition to teaching math and science and all the other things that the teacher is responsible for. So I understand. And as a parent and as a voter, I want my child to have this now.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's one of the tricky things. So it's good to have a plan.
Sure. A little bit of inside baseball question though. Like thank you for sticking with us. This is really, if for some people, this is really important. And so it's really good to have this for y'all. To those who are, you have 3 years, the districts have 3 years to use it.
Mm-hmm.
If they hold it for 2 years, or 3 years? Are all 3 years money still usable, only that current year?
So you can spend the 23, 24 money. You could have spent it last year, this year, or next school year. Okay. But by the end of next school year, if you haven't spent all of it, maybe you spent none of it, it all goes back to the State Department of Education and goes into the Prop 28 like pot of money and will be redistributed across the entire state the following year.
Gotcha. So it does. So it's not like it just goes away after the first year. It's like you have 3 years right. to spend the whole. Yes. Okay. Okay. Yeah. Good to know. Mm-hmm. Cool. Things you learn also, and when you go to the Mega Arts Conference, like last year when I went to two sessions with you. Yeah. Cool. And is there anything else you'd like to add on to this question? Are we kind of like?
I was going to say there are districts that do have an arts person that are doing great. Like La Mesa Spring Valley hired someone not with their Prop 28 money, but they hired somebody the year before to put things in place. And then they're using their Prop 28 money to hire new arts educators and to buy them the supplies and materials, because you have to spend at least 80% of the funding if your district has at least 500 students in it. We have a district that has like 499, so they don't have to follow these percentages. But if 500 or more, you have to spend at least 80% of the money on classified or credentialed teachers who are employees of the school district. So a teaching artist could become a classified employee of the school district and get that part of the money. The district office can keep up to 1% of the funding for administrative costs. And then the other, whatever's left, the 19%, the 2%, right? It just depends upon how much of that more than 80% you spend on salaries. Whatever's left can be spent on hiring teaching artists, on professional learning, like going to a conference, whatever that conference happens to be, and on materials and supplies for a classroom. And again, it can't be spent on facilities. So that's one of the things that's a little bit tricky in some areas. And people are like, can we move a portable building from one side to another?
Are students engaging in it?
Right. So talk to your district legal counsel. They're ultimately who makes those decisions. And then the auditors afterwards will let people know if they did not do things the right way. And by the way, our state superintendent of public instruction, who is currently Tony Thurman, has said districts that are choosing not to follow the laws will not receive funding in the future.
Oh, wow.
And I'm on an advisory council to him. So he is very well aware and wants to know what's going on. And without ever naming names of districts, though, I've given him examples in our region and others from across the state where I've heard different things happening. So he's very eager to know what's going on. And they do have a plan in place that districts will not continue to receive their funding if they're not using it the way the law and the way the voters, very important, intended. So
something
to be aware of.
Good to know. Thank you for all this.
You're welcome.
I have one more question. I think I have one more that I'm going to ask, but inspired by these. This one is by, I believe this is anonymous number one again. This person had a lot to share.
Yeah, that's great.
So where do you think the disconnect lies in districts that don't include the arts in their strategic planning? Is it all at this board level, superintendent level, or school site level where the push for the arts is lacking?
It could be any of those, right? And that's the hard thing. Sometimes I've seen superintendents who are all about arts education. That is one of their top priorities. That was the case in your district at a point in time. Like, it was such an important thing, and there can be a superintendent that really gets it. And so they make that part of their mission and vision. I would say that if you look at any school site, mission and vision statements, any district's statements, anybody's LCAP, arts education is included in that, even if it's not explicitly called out. And there are some resources where you can find information to make those connections really obvious to people, even if it's not written in there. Because I was talking to some people who review LCAPs, because all county offices of education are responsible for reviewing every district's LCAPs and helping them get those finalized, which is also happening right now. Sometimes they were talking about the pros and cons of listing every single thing in the LCAP, but it's all included in there. So I can share with you some resources that you can share with listeners about that as well. Because part of it is really, you need to know how to connect with school board members. Our parents need to know how to connect. Like, so it could be anywhere, right? I've seen school boards really passionate about arts education, or one school board member, or one principal, one assistant principal, right? All it takes is one person, but it needs a person. And then it really has to become part of the community, because as most of us have seen, so there's one situation where we had a district whose superintendent was all about arts education. And then when that person retired, the next person didn't really see that as one of the big priorities. And because it really relied on that superintendent and everyone hadn't like really come together around it, they just, oh, this person's got it, it's always going to be there. Things kind of started to shift a bit after that person retired. So it can't rely on one person, because then if a position's gone, somebody retires, somebody moves. And that's a tricky part, right?
Mm-hmm. It very much is. I feel like, again, I've said this every single time, and I feel like teachers always focus on the four walls. And so what they see is what they see here. Yeah. And in the end, the change has to happen when you make those interconnections with other people, whether it's fellow coworkers, it's your site admin, or broader. Mm-hmm. I guess like my last question in this segment right here, I guess, for you is, how do we as full-time music teachers or arts teachers in general, what's your one encouragement or how to ensure that it is a community effort? How do we make community members? How do we create not just music students, but we create a music community? What's your biggest advice as people who might have kids, might have partners, who have definitely have full-time jobs? Like how do we do this?
It's really important to make the time to connect, because again, I think everything comes back to relationships. And whether that means you eat lunch with other people in your school site like once a week, if you never leave your classroom, right? And I do this regularly too. I'm sitting at my computer, eating my lunch at my desk. Like, I need to go talk and connect with other people. Even if it's, you know, if you never eat lunch outside of your desk, like once a month, like whatever it is, walk through the office on your way to your classroom and say good morning to people, right? Like, get something in the school newsletter, have something put on the website. Like, if your school has social media, like, see if you can get a post out there, right? Like, just finding one thing where you can connect. I've been at multiple sites before too, and that's really hard when you're an itinerant teacher, to make all those connections. But just figuring out, like, pick a site, you know, figure out a way to connect. If you have any kind of gatherings where parents are coming to the school or to a performance of some sort, or coming in to watch class some days. I used to do coffee concerts all the time. We'd have coffee and things for parents and they could come in, which again, this was where I happened to be at this one time that worked for some people, but it didn't work for everybody, right? Who couldn't leave their job during the day.
Right.
So I would want to do that differently in the future. But if you can share little messages with parents, send the school board an email. Like, you can email, in theory, check, I don't know, but especially if you live in that community, you could send an email to the school board. I know a teacher that emails the school board every time they have a performance coming up, and even afterwards. Students did a great job at this concert. We had, you know, all these family members that came to watch, and you would be very proud of them, things like that, just little updates. So find one thing, and maybe find a teacher at another site that you can connect with, and you kind of make that deal with each other. Like, hey, maybe we can go get coffee, you know, once a month, and let's promise that we're going to like send one social media message, or, you know, whatever it happens to be. And then you can kind of be each other's buddies about, did you do this? Just like you're trying to drink a bunch of water, right? And you put a reminder in your phone, or you connect with somebody like, let's have a challenge. Just find a way to make it doable. Again, it's just those small things that can really make a big difference.
Connection. Yeah. Connection is the key to advocacy.
Yes.
I like that. Cool. Well, Pauline, maybe I should make a promise with you that we should get coffee at least once before I retire. How about
that?
Cool.
That sounds great.
Pauline, this has been a great chat. There's still one more segment after this, but we'll get to that after the break.
I want to take a quick break and thank my husband, Brian, who's been working behind the scenes producing these episodes every week on all of the platforms and on time. But you need to know that he is first a financial planner for Mission Trails Financial. Mission Trails Financial is a partner that seeks to guide clients in the journey to financial success. They believe that people need a financial advisor that aims to provide strategies for success. Mission Trails Financial helps people navigate investments, tax planning, and insurance. Imagine working with an advisor who isn't tied to specific brands. Mission Trails Financial has a fiduciary responsibility to act in the best interests of their clients by providing independent, objective advice. Their mission is to help clients accomplish their financial goals. As Joe Vitale once said, a goal should scare you a little and excite you a lot. Do yourself a favor and set up a time to chat with Mission Trails Financial. Visit www.missiontrailsfinancial.com or call 619-419-0238 to schedule a call. You'll be glad you did. We believe that leaning on professionals is how we get ahead. Check out the program notes for more information.
And next, we have Spiccato. But before that, a hard left turn. Thank you, everyone who has been a part of this journey, whether you've been joining us since episode zero or today. Thank you so much for being a part of this. And if you love this podcast, please support the things you love. This is a two-person venture run by two full-time educators in San Diego. Are we still the most expensive city to live in?
Probably.
Something like that. So help us out, please. If you want these lights to still stay on, come to our Patreon. Drop us a buck. Patreon.com/CHClassroom. There we have merch and lesson ideas. But if you can't support us, that's okay. Or at least monetarily, if you cannot support us, that's okay. This is a free podcast, always meant to be. But please, you know, spend some time to leave us a review or like us on YouTube or any podcast listening app. That all said, to Spiccato. So this one's going to be a classic Spiccato where we ask you some rapid fire questions. All right. You've been asking a lot of questions. I really appreciate you giving us all the juice. This is going to be more on the chill side, I would hope. So first question, what is the best song written in the last 100 years?
Oh, my goodness. I love the song Salisbury Hill by Peter Gabriel.
Yeah. Peter Gabriel. Love it. Peter Gabriel or Phil Collins?
Oh, why would you do that to me? It depends.
Depends on the day. That's fine. All right. Next question. Kill one. French toast, waffles, or pancake?
Oh, pancakes.
Yes, that's my answer. Because I don't know why I forgot. Yes. Okay. We're friends again. Cool. Is a hot dog a sandwich?
Oh, no.
No, it's not. We're not friends anymore. Cool. And next off, where do you want to be in your career? You've been, you know, participating in a lot of things in your career. Where do you want to be in your professional and personal career in 5 years?
In a place where I am able to support people in whatever way they need and still enjoying doing so.
I'm going to ask one question because I've asked these questions to my online interviews, but I ask questions for you based on things that have happened in the recent events for me. So this does not have to be a rapid fire question. You in administration, how do you ensure that you push away from cynicism when there are so many webbings and a lot of issues with the politics of education? How do you ensure that cynicism is not in your blood when you get home or in general?
That can be a really tough one sometimes, especially the last couple of years. Actually, Prop 28 has made some of that a little bit complicated. But hearing positive stories from people and knowing how the arts are making a difference in kids' lives, or even just being around students and seeing their joy, their love of the arts, their love of school, their love for one another, whatever that happens to be. So I try to get around students when that starts to happen.
That's awesome. Get around students. Be around the kids.
Yep.
And last one. Do you have any questions for me?
That is a great question. Where do you see yourself in 5 years?
Where do I see? I would like to see. I think I'm still going to be teaching. I think I'm still going to be teaching, but I really want to lean more into advocacy for music education. And what that looks like is pretty broad. I recognize that I have talents in a lot of visual elements, you know, like we talked about, you know, not optics, we talked about making things visible, making things transparent. And I think that's something that needs to happen more. And so I would love to find ways to make that, the amazing things that are happening in our four walls of the classroom, be more transparent to the public, whether it's families or even, you know, sponsors or people who love the arts. So that's something I kind of want to lean more into. So that's where I see myself in 5 years, doing both.
I can totally see that.
Awesome. Well, Pauline, thank you so much for spending your Friday afternoon chatting with me and chatting with our fellow listeners. Is there anything you've already plugged? The Mega Arts Conference, you could still sign up, sign up as soon as possible. Link will be in the bio or what description. There we go. Link will be in the description below. But is there anything else you'd like to either plug or shout out such?
No, just I want everyone to just keep on learning and keep on caring about kids, and because they need you and their families need you, and make sure you take good care of yourself.
Appreciate that. And where can people reach you if they have any questions?
I can put my email address, pauline.crooks@sdcoe.net.
Awesome, awesome.
Share that with you.
And we're not, you're not active on Twitter anymore, are you?
Not really.
Rest in peace, Twitter.
I know. It's
the good old days are the old days. Do you think you have Threads? Have you done anything on Threads yet or no?
A little bit, but not really yet.
Yeah. Well, maybe one day. Maybe one day we'll make something happen. And you can follow me. Speaking of Threads, you can find me on all the socials at Mr. Seligman, MrSeligman, on all the socials. TikTok I'm becoming more active on lately, so check that up. And you can find us at CH Classroom on all the socials. Or if you have any questions, please feel free to email us at chaoticharmonyclassroom@gmail.com. Thank you, Pauline. It's been a pleasure chatting with you, and we'll get that coffee in soon.
That sounds great. Thank you, Jonathan.
All right. Take care.
You too.
Bye.
Bye.
The Chaotic Harmony Podcast is a joint project between Crystal Pridmore and Jonathan Seligman. You can find us online at chaoticharmonyclassroom.com. You can email us at chaoticharmonyclassroom@gmail.com and let us know what you think. Give us feedback about what you would like to hear in future episodes. We're on all the socials. Find us on facebook.com/chaoticharmonyclassroom. You can find us on Twitter at @chclassroom, Instagram at @chaoticharmonyclassroom, and you can even find our episodes on YouTube. Chaotic Harmony is the name of our channel. Special thanks to Brian Pridmore for his help with production and equipment. www.pridmoria.com.